Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
All right, everyone, welcome to this week's after show, Big Brother Up Late. So I have a bit more of a sobering topic to talk about, but I think a really important one, especially seeing the reports that already in 2019, 11 trans women have been murdered in the US.
Trans women of color.
Women of color specifically. Yes. Also, if you look at this statistically, I believe it was 26 trans women were murdered in 2018.
Yes. Whoa.
In the US. Yeah. Just in the US. So a lot of my figures are based around the US figures, just a heads up, guys.
Yeah.
From an analysis point of view, it paints a pretty grim picture for what's been happening in the world for last year and what's still happening at this current point in time. And I think a hugely underrepresented an underappreciated part of our community are the women of color, the trans women of color, who have contributed a lot to what makes us the best G's that we can be. You see their footprints across all of the things that we enjoy as gay men, in our media, in our vernacular, their impact
in our party scene,
in our part, the impact they have on our lives is incredible. But the sad reality is that systematically, life is not easy for these people.
No.
And at least in the US at this current point in time, certain people are taking action to make life even more difficult for them. So a few points, for example, with things like Trump putting, removing
rolling
rights.
He's really intent on trans people and
getting rid of their rights. Like, he's really honing in on them specifically.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're things that fundamentally disable people from living successful lives.
Yeah.
So if you were to ever ask the question, why is this number specifically for trans women of color so high? Why is that number and the violence directed towards them so high? You could easily mistake it and go like, well, there's some sort of prejudice towards them specifically and who they are intrinsically as people. But a bit of closer inspection realized, no, these people were set up systematically to have violent acts thrust upon them, unfortunately. Yeah. And even a few of, to bring it like locally here in Australia, a few of my friends that identify as non-binary or trans have experienced the same extreme difficulties because what it impacts is employment, housing, healthcare, and also the protections that they get from law enforcement. If you take those things away or make all of those things, sorry, I realize I'm monologuing right now.
If you
take those things away from a person, you are basically putting them in a position where something awful is going to happen.
Absolutely.
A really striking term which I hadn't heard before looking more into the issues affecting the trans community, is that of what they call survival work.
Yes.
It's been mislabeled as sex work, and like maybe these people were dying
like
because
a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe these people were dying because they are involved in the
sex trade or like drug dealing or like
so forced into these roles.
Yeah, but it's so striking to think of it. No, this is survival. Mm.
Well, that's it. Like they're not really given any other opportunity, and at the end of the day, a lot of trans people are just trying to provide for their families and create a safe space for themselves by putting themselves in danger, because that's the only option that they have.
Yeah. Like I've heard it from my friends. They've basically said, I've applied for 10 to 20 houses like in order to rent a property, and they just know from the way they present socially when trying to put in, they do not have the same chance to get these properties, and so they couch surf. They spend time living in the backs of cars. They're homeless for extended periods, and that is as far from what I would expect the reality of a LGBTQIA plus person in 2019 in Australia to have to experience. And it's not hard to logically connect the dots for someone struggling to find housing, struggling to get employment too. These people have job interviews, and they basically tell me within 10 minutes, they know this is a no bueno.
It's not going to happen.
This is a no bueno for me. It's not going to happen. That what options are left to these people? So I think it's really important to discuss what is happening in the world, what we can do.
It is,
as well, and what the current perception of the experience, the trans experience is for other members of the LGBT community.
Isn't their life
community
expectancy 30 to 35? I saw that
which
stat
really,
which is
really,
really in the United States specifically.
I think one thing I get really annoyed about is when we only look at American statistics, because it isn't the whole picture. So in other culturally similar Western countries to the US, the numbers are really different. So in the UK, there was 9 trans people murdered between 2008 and 2017. So across 10 years, essentially, there was 9 people. The last recorded murder of a trans person I could find in Australia was 2016, and prior to that was 2014. Now, these statistics are still fucked up. They're really, really, really bad. And it also doesn't mean that trans people in these countries, and also Canada is very similar, New Zealand is very similar. It doesn't mean that trans people in these countries aren't facing violence and discrimination and all the stuff that you've just described. But I think it's really important to look at the numbers and ask why there is a difference. And if the question is, why are trans people of colour being murdered? It sounds like a really scary question, and what the fuck is the answer? It's actually really fucking simple, I think. I think the difference when you look at these statistics, you've got to acknowledge, well, there's something culturally different happening between America and these other countries. And you look at the leadership and you look at the advancements of rights of trans people and people of colour, which sometimes are the same thing and sometimes are different things depending on the specific case, by their government and society as a whole. And you've got to acknowledge that there are differences there. When you are saying these people are not fit to be in the military, or regardless of what gender they identify with, they're going to the prison that it is for the gender they were born with, then you're basically validating the belief that these people are some sort of second-class human.
Yeah.
And you're validating the murderers that are going to go out and enacting these cases. And then when these cases aren't being investigated at all properly looked
into. And the police aren't trained in the right way to deal with it.
Yeah. And then, and then when trans people, which, and again, I'm not saying that it is perfect in Australia or the UK or Canada or anything like that, but there is a noticeable difference in between that and America.
Yeah.
You sort of got to look at, well, when people in countries like this are going, are they getting more support than when they're going in America? And maybe that's why these people in America are not feeling safe enough to go and ask for help or ask for shelter or whatever. Yeah. And shelter is another thing as well. Like we have specific organizations here that are doing wonderful work to have safe spaces for these people to go to. Again, not enough, and they need more resources. That's we haven't solved the problem here.
But doing better
but
than
we need. Yeah, yeah, when you're looking at these statistics, 23 in 1 year.
Yeah.
And that's just trans people of color.
And that's just the people that have been reported.
And that's exactly that's the other big thing.
The amount of people that.
And I think it was actually that statistic was just trans women of color. Yeah, so on top of that, you've got trans women
of color. Exactly. People who are Asian.
And trans men and all sorts of other people that might be cross dressers or something working in the sex space. There is something really wrong happening in America at the moment for these people, and it's scary. And not to take away anything from anyone else living in any other country, but I almost feel like they should be given refugee status.
Yeah, that's what other I was countries. Thinking.
It's
I mean, like, our refugees have a great time here.
Well, yeah, I
yeah, maybe not here.
But I mean, it's. I feel like the UN needs to sort of step in and sort of say what the fuck is going on.
It's getting to that level. It's like a full-on epidemic.
It's really scary.
There's also huge numbers of misreporting due to training. Like, there's a number of trans people that are killed that are not reported as trans because the police force
and then they use the different names and stuff that they don't.
So I'm sure a lot of these figures are, like, in reality much higher than what they actually are.
Yeah.
But are you talking about the American figures or the rest of the world? Or?
I would say across the board. I don't think there's a single country that could put their hands up right now and say, like,
we're good.
We are all good on this. We mucho gusto. And the other thing that I think is really important when discussing the experience of our trans brothers and sisters is I can only imagine the mental impact that it has when the only time that you see your community represented is
by death.
Like, in memoriam.
That's it.
It's shocking. Like, when we were subjected to the postal vote, for example, the impact it had on me was the only time I saw us represented in the news was when we were boiled down to a figure because we were polling in a certain percentage or whatever, and that really made me feel some sort of way. But for years now, trans people have had only experienced seeing members of their community represented in the media when someone died. And not...
Nothing positive.
Yeah, and by a violent death as well. And I think it's great that we're starting to tell more positive
stories. I think we should acknowledge that there's some incredible trans people that are doing work in the political spectrum and the acting and the media and all that sort of stuff. But you're right that that's not the regular. That is the exception.
That's the exception. Yeah. And I think as members of the LGBT community, whenever we talk about something, I'm always like, action oriented. I'm like, what can you do? Like, you're listening to the show. What can you do? Mm. Or what can I do when I go home? Because these figures are fucking awful. Yeah. And for me, it always boils down to visibility and these grassroots kind of things. And it's about what you're sharing and not just, although it is incredibly important to share the names and the stories of the people that have unfortunately died in the last 6 months of this year, but also the achievements, the contributions to our culture that the trans community have had.
Yeah. This sort of brings me back to, like, when the plebiscite was sort of going through, and I feel like one of our local people, Dawn Lee, very, very vocal once the plebiscite went through, because
we need to get her on the show.
Like, we've spoken about it before, but, like, it was very much like, we got our rights, and I feel like a lot of people in the LGBTQA+ community, once marriage equality went through, was just like, oh, okay, cool, we're done. Whereas Dawn Lee was very vocal and was just like, no, like, we're still not done. Yeah. We're still not there.
Dawn Lee's great.
There's still my trans brothers and sisters who are still suffering, and I still need you all to come together as a community.
The 100% not over for anyone.
That's
absolutely need to be speaking for the people there.
That's it.
I'm so lucky to have Dawn Lee in my life. She's the first trans person I've ever met and had, like, a connection with. And I had an in-depth conversation in the club with her, but we just sat down and we were both, like, off our face. And I was like, can I just speak to you and ask you questions, like, unguarded, and I'm curious, and I've never met someone like you. And she was so lovely and warm and open, and we just had, like, the best chat on the couch. And it's important to build these people up, and
it's important,
like,
to talk about these people as well that are doing this great work.
She's doing great work, and she's always posting her piece on, like, Facebook, like, long thing pieces, and, like, she's very intelligent. And I love her and everything she does.
I had the pleasure of, as we've talked about, the Midsummer Extravaganza, producing that last year, and hanging out with Carlotta backstage. Carlotta was a drag performer in the Lay Girls show, which is very famous up in Sydney in the 60s, and then was one of the first people in Australia to legally have a physical sex change operation. And is an incredible person. Like, what a life. But also we forget that Carlotta is a breakfast television host in Australia. The fact that Australia, I mean, I think
that's pretty progressive.
There's a lot of shit happening in this country. Yeah. But, I mean, I so rarely watch breakfast television because if I'm not at work, I'm hungover in bed. But the fact that middle Australia is watching a trans woman on television sitting next to fucking, I don't know, Kerri-Anne Kennelly or whoever else is on that panel. Oh, no, Ding Dong Drysdale and those girls. I think that's really exciting. It's so amazing. And there are exciting people like that, like, doing some really wonderful work, and they deserve a pat on the back.
I honestly didn't know a lot about Carlotta until I had watched the film based on her life.
Yeah, right, yeah. The miniseries,
and we'd only just watched it recently, and I was just like, holy fucking shit. This person is incredible.
Yeah.
They come from a really, really hard life, and they've worked really hard to get where they are, and they've really promoted being a trans person is okay in a really positive light. And it's just amazing. Years, I really, really love it.
So it's important to focus on the people, I think, but just because I feel like they... If I was going through that much shit, the last thing I'd have the energy to do would be fight for rights. Yeah, fight absolutely. For, I would just be like, I just need a fucking second at home on the couch watching Netflix.
That's it.
And yet these people still have the energy to go
out
and
be there for your trans brothers and sisters and support them.
Yeah, support them.
And
promote them.
Be that support network.
And educate everyone else around
spread
you
about
them.
Well, look, it's been a bit of a heavy topic. We probably should have put this in the main show, but thanks for sticking with us through it. Some very important stuff we've chatted about this evening. And, you know, have a think about it. Have a chat. Talk about it. I love you guys.
Love you too.
Long time. Guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So now that Carl's finished talking about weddings for 20 minutes, welcome back to the after show.
Hey, Luke, go fuck yourself.
thank you to our patrons for supporting the show. It helps us put on our live shows and tour and bring you some quality content.
So as this goes to air, we will have just had World AIDS Day, which I thought might be a good chance to sort of have a bit of a refresher about what World AIDS Day is and what the focus was this year, and also just talk about how we're going as a community in relation to that. So for anyone that's not aware, World AIDS Day is on the 1st of December. It was established by the World Health Organization in 1988, both to raise awareness and also share information about HIV and AIDS. Obviously, at that time, it was sort of the peak of the AIDS epidemic. But over time, it's also, or over the years, it's also shifted a lot of the focus to also be about fighting the stigma that a HIV diagnosis comes with.
Yes.
So this year's theme was communities make the difference, because communities do play a huge role in ending transmissions of any disease.
Yeah.
So that's what they were really focusing on this year. And stigma is a huge part for people living with HIV.
Still.
Yeah, it's awful. Obviously, HIV is no longer a death sentence, but we still see politicians and high-profile people using terms like eradicate and banish.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. When you sort of think about it, how it would feel for a person who's living with HIV to hear terms like eradicate and banish. One of the big reasons for that is a recent study in the States revealed that 28% of millennials, and we would think that millennials would be the more progressive people when it comes to stigma and that sort of thing, but 28% of millennials would not talk to, be friends with, or hug a person who's living with HIV, which is fucking awful.
Damn.
And it also showed that 41% of Generation Z, so that's people under the age of 22, and 23% of millennials who are HIV negative were completely or partially uninformed about what HIV even is and how it can be transmitted.
Yeah.
Which is really scary considering that, you know, whilst new transmissions have not hugely increased or decreased over the last few years, a lot of them have been young people. So we're sort of, this knowledge isn't being shared. It's not being talked about the way it needs to be talked about. And young people aren't getting the information that they need for us to end new transmissions.
We talk about the young folk.
Yeah.
On the show quite a bit and how in tune they are with so many social issues. And they're falling on the right side of so many things. Like going through some of the stuff about World AIDS Day, really just poses a question to me. Why is this particular thing seem to be skipping the generation? Like, why are young people still so uninformed about HIV?
Education. It's a really good question. I mean, look, I think it all stems back to that, how the conversation happened in the 80s and the that we've talked about, the Grim Reaper. It's really just, I think, a hangover still from that period of time when it was discussed in a really...
So the Grim Reaper, that was an advertising campaign?
It was an advertising campaign.
Specifically Australia?
It was similar ones were used around the world, but Australia had a very strong campaign.
Uh-huh.
And there was one famous one that I remember clearly of the Grim Reaper bowling in a bowling alley, and then there's like all these different sort of stereotypes of the community standing there, and it's sort of saying, you never know who it's going to hit. Yeah, exactly, But I mean, look, the Grim Reaper is a symbolic thing that we can reference when we're talking about the way that it was treated. But there was also just a lack of conversation about what it is. And even when they did discover what it was, this attitude towards people that have it was still very much about them being dirty and not to associate with them and to steer clear of them and that sort of thing. Which, of course, we now know is completely untrue and have known that for a long time. But yet, sadly, that conversation's not being filtered down. And it's because of assholes like Donald Trump.
What? He's a great guy.
He's been president for 3 World AIDS Days he's made speeches on all of those World AIDS Days.
He fails to mention anything about like gay people or bisexual.
Never mentioned LGBTI community in any of his World AIDS Day speeches, which is really fucked. Because we know that the stigma and fear leads to people not having all the information and all the tools that they need, which then in turn allows the disease to thrive. So
it trickles down.
Really fucked, because it just goes back to his politics, his personal politics, who he's trying to appeal to, and it infuriates me that you can, something as important as this, you can still play politics with it. It's really fucked.
And it's his personal politics, because it's not a standard that's been set.
Obama specifically
mentioned the LGBTI community. So, because I think some people hear pull quotes like that, like Donald Trump didn't mention it, and they just assume, well, maybe in that position, you're just not supposed to or whatever. But the truth is, these are personal politics, and that's a conscious choice.
Yes, he's trying to appeal to a certain, and it doesn't suit his political profile to be talking about the LGBTI community and how it relates to HIV. Yeah. So, and the problem is that I feel like sometimes it feels like we're saying, oh, we're not getting acknowledgement or something like that. Yeah. It's much bigger than that. It's really important that people
we're
like...
We were speaking about before about millennials having like, what percent of millennials?
28%
of millennials. Yeah, having a lot of stigma. I wonder if that has anything to do with the education they're getting in schools. Like, I only did the last 2 years of high school in Australia. So I don't know like what kind of education you guys had growing up here in regards to HIV and AIDS.
Yeah. I had no education.
Nothing? Like, so like they don't actually teach much here in Australia?
Just to be clear, that study was an American study. Yeah, okay. But I would suspect that there is sort of similar results if you were to do the study here. No, my education about HIV in an all-boys Catholic school in the late 90s, early noughties, was that if two men have sex, they will get AIDS.
Yeah.
And my best friend and I were having sex at the time secretly, and we went out.
So that's it.
So we didn't know that it was a disease or how it was transmitted and that sort of thing.
So they gave you nothing.
We were just told by a RE teacher, an old religious person, that if two men have sex, that they'll just automatically, that's how it happens.
That's so interesting.
And we believed that for months.
Because obviously I grew up in South Africa and it's like one of the number one killers in Africa, HIV and AIDS. And it was quite a big part of our education, actually, but never in kind of regards to gay or bisexual
people.
Not
in a gay context.
Yeah, because I think it is a big killer of the African communities because they don't believe in protection. And
well, they probably don't have all of the...
Yeah, I mean,
technically, we're in a Christian country and Christians don't believe in protection, but they still use it because they've had the
but,
tools.
But there are a lot of like superstitious people and believe certain things. A lot of that. So it was trying to get a lot of education. So we've been talking about all the bad stuff, but there have been some really nice progressive things happening around the world. Like, I saw an article in New Zealand that they are the world's first sperm bank for people with HIV, which is helping to alleviate stigma associated with it.
And what a great way of doing it.
Such a good one, because like there's so much associated with like blood donation and everything like that. So I think that is a great way to combat that.
When people realize that a HIV positive person can be a sperm donor, they sort of realize.
Yeah, you're like, well,
It's an online sperm bank too, wasn't it?
Yeah. So they can.
Really?
Yeah.
It's I didn't see that online.
Okay.
I always think, you know, there's a lot of argument about whether, you know, commercial support for LGBTI mm-hmm. causes are a good thing or a bad thing. But I think it's really worth looking at the commercial sector and seeing how they're integrating with these sorts of things. So Apple has its Red Apple program. Apple. So Apple is in like Macintosh. I don't think
Macintosh. Who the hell calls it Macintosh? Yeah.
You know what I mean.
Jaspers.
Apple is in iPhone Apple.
Yeah.
Have the Red Apple program in the States where the stores turn red for
all the logos, so, I think, on the top of the store, and they have red decals on their windows.
Exactly, yeah.
I think any product red item that they sell, a part of that goes towards as well. And then I think fantastic. That's all throughout throughout the year as well. Yeah. So that's really good, at least. And I mean, because they'll be making like fucking
huge amounts incredible money. And they can afford to be doing
it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it is nice to see kind of corporate companies like that doing some part, having such a big impact, yeah.
I think the great thing too about raising awareness is it's something we're learning more about generation by generation. Mm-hmm. So I've specifically learnt things about the language to use around HIV through doing this show itself and through certain individuals in our community who are really vocal and are really passionate about this. And even as someone who is quite knowledgeable about things happening in the LGBT community, I realized some of this trickle down stuff is missing me as well, because I'm just getting the mainstream media approach, and so the language I was using is outdated because I was raised in that same generation as Tom, which had really fucked up views about it. But I think representation is so much better now. And I said it on the show heaps, but Pose, like,
oh my gosh,
to watch Pose, which showed the human impact of the AIDS crisis, but also from a few different perspectives of living through it, as well as the struggle that I think the show, you know, some of it's a bit fluffy and whatever, but from that angle, it really is an important piece of media. And when we talk about young people and how they're getting their information and what they're interested in, it's the media. Millennials are tuned into media, and that's how they know about stuff. And Pose getting so much attention, being so popular, and being widely available, I think that's something that I would definitely signpost towards the younger generation to say, hey, this will actually give some an empathetic view towards that experience, and may help you on the path to further your knowledge about what it's like now.
And I think also really helpful people like JVN, Jonathan Van Ness, coming forward. Absolutely. And these really like kind of positive role models for people coming forward and telling everyone that they have this virus.
I mean,
and
representation is very livable. For any vilified minority is so important in mainstream media. And to have someone like Jonathan Van Ness,
I think that
who is just living, you know, his best life and is such a happy, wonderful person. Of course, it's also really important to sort of talk about what's happening at home as far as access. And I didn't realize until I was reading up about this today that Victoria only has one government-funded sexual health clinic that anyone can drop into. So that's the Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic.
Okay.
I cannot sing their praises high enough. Obviously, in Australia, we can also go to GPs and that sort of thing. There's also the Pronto Clinic in Fitzroy, although that's designed for men who have sex with men. So the Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic on Swanson Street, just at the top of the city in Carlton, anyone can walk in there. You don't need an appointment, and they'll see you and help you. But it's so busy that there's times where they have to close their doors because there's too many people to see. I mean, I've been there at times when there's like a 3.5 hour wait.
Wow.
And for me, it's like, you know what? I dropped in here. I'm getting a free service. And if my test results are positive for something like gonorrhea or chlamydia that they can check on the day, then I will get my medication free of charge as well.
Yeah.
Personally, for me, when I'm sitting there for up to 3 hours, I don't mind. But then I also see people yelling at the staff.
Yeah.
Because it's taking too long and that sort of thing, which really fucking shits me. They also have to sometimes advise that if you come in the afternoon that they might not be able to see you that day, depending on how many people have presented that day and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Have you used Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic before, their services?
No, not that.
Oh, you've never been?
No.
Right.
No, I haven't. I think I've only been to Paran Clinic.
Yeah, right. Which you book in for an appointment.
Yes, I booked in there. Yeah, so which, I didn't
that's
wait
great
long
as
at
well.
All,
Being able to book an appointment is really useful and helpful for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Walk-in clinics, I think, are really important because, A, it might be something that you've just got symptoms of that needs to be treated really urgently because you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And also for a lot of people, just the fear of going to a doctor about their sexual health.
Definitely.
If they're not someone that talks about it quite openly, you know, that can be scared shitless going to a GP, and also making an appointment can be really scary, and then having to wait 2 days to go and talk to a doctor.
All the wait times are very scary. Yeah.
If you can have a drop-in clinic, that means it's, you know, you can go, right, I have the guts to do it right now. I'm going to go just to the clinic right now, and I'm just going to go and
courage
do it.
And just go,
So yeah, I was shocked to find out that the Melbourne Sexual Health Clinic is the only one in Victoria, considering New South Wales, which has a similar population, has 37 drop-in,
what the hell?
Drop-in clinics. Yeah.
Why do we only have one?
Oh my gosh.
So lovely to see you again, boys. And thank you again to our Patreon subscribers. We love you so much.
Yes. We'll remember to recruit a gay friend.
Yeah.
And bring them to our live show. Yes.
We'll see you at the meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, at the meeting every Sunday.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.